Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great podcast. ESPN, in partnership with Peyton Manning's Omaha Productions, presents The VC Show with eight-time NBA All-Star Vince Carter and co-host Roz Gold Onwude, who talk all things basketball with some of the biggest names in sports and entertainment. That's The VC Show. Listen where you are listening to this podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth, what's going on?
Nothing much, man. I don't know how people had a time to watch all the stuff that we need to watch and have opinions on and still have a life. I'm trying to figure it out. I'm going to need you to teach me how to manage my time, how to efficiently and effectively watch NBA games and NFL games and read everything and then still record all this stuff and also have time to have fun and be there for friends and family.
Well, I got to say, I don't really know that much about how to do the last part. Like, I've kind of worked on that. Like, especially when game theory comes around, man. I really don't know how to do that second part. The first part, you start figuring out how to pick your spots. You know what is going to matter. You know what's not going to matter. But what I don't understand is how people at least pretend to be doing all the watching and be watching all that other TV. That's the part. When I listen to people talk and I'm like, where do you have the time to do this? It's watching all that other TV. And you know what I realized? Most of my watching all that other TV people are married and tired and they don't feel like going nowhere. So they just sit down and watch all that other TV.
Yeah, I can't keep up with all that other TV either. It's just too much for me to have opinions on it and whatever. I think that might be the trick, though, is like you mix in the family relationship, parent time into just watching. It's like, you know what? I'm going to watch some. You know what, young lady, you like basketball now. You know what, we about to watch Love is Blind tonight.
It's a date. Like that becomes the interpretation. Now, we're going to get to some NFL, but I'm going to tell y'all right now, we ain't going to talk about Kyrie. And you know why we're not going to talk about Kyrie? Because every time I do that, something happened right after, right? Let me tell you what happened on Wednesday. So I retweeted a clip of me on Costa's show talking about how I didn't think Kyrie would play another game in the NBA, right? And like I say, my reasons for thinking this are very sensible, okay? Like, or I don't know if I think it anymore, and that's where we'll get to the point, but my reasons for believing that have been very, very sensible, but it sounds like a hot take, right? And so I had retweeted me saying this on Costa's. And then the people at Michael K's show saw it, and they're like, yo, let's have Bomani on to talk about it. And I like those guys. I've known Peter Rosenberg for 15 years at this point, known Michael and Don for a while, you know, and I trust them enough, right? Like, they're not trying to set me up for the ambush. So I'm like, okay, cool. I get on there, and of course, hot take. I start seeing newspapers putting blog posts up about it, and it starts bouncing around. I'll be if, like, 2 hours later, the Nets say Kyrie might play on Sunday. Well, then I wake up on Thursday and NJ.com is still retweeting me saying that. And I'm like, dog, clearly the news cycle has changed. Clearly something is different than it was before. And so we had that thing happen to us where we couldn't even put out a damn show on a Friday after we did it twice. Because everything always, they want to hit the L1 every time we get in here and start talking about something. So no. I still got my Kyrie questions and all of that stuff. I will ask this, and I didn't ask you about this before. Say we were going to talk about it, but I imagine you've seen it and got a thought about it. Did you see the interview that Kevin Durant did with Chris Haynes?
Nope.
Okay, so I'll just tell you the part that matters. A couple things that are interesting.
I told you I can't keep up with everything, Bomani. I know,
but I figured you weren't able to keep up with the other stuff because you had got to this. So,
okay,
couple things. One, and granted, these were redactions, so I don't know exactly if this was the case, but no one has ever said the N-word on the record in an interview more than Kevin Durant appeared to do with Chris Haynes. It was the ultimate level of comfort. Like, when people start talking about, yo, I can't believe he said that, go look at how many times the redaction fits perfectly if you use the N-word in the ways that black people do. And you will understand, oh, man, it was vibes, baby. It was just vibes. But he had a part there where he said, I think he was trying to make the point about he was talking about the season and how he's enjoying the season, you know, and he says he really is enjoying it. And he was trying to make a point about just kind of being, you know, the responsibility of being Kevin Durant at this point. And he says, our starting lineup is Royce O'Neal, Edmund Sumner, Nick Claxton, and Joe Harris, right? He's like, basically, the only reason you expect us to win anything is because of me. Right?
It's fair.
It's so fair. It's so fair, right? Like, this is the real deal of it. The only reason you think this team can win any game against an NBA team is because they got seven, which is what he said, right? And then it got to, man, he's being a poor leader and all of these things. And I was like, I'm sorry. I feel very confident that all them dudes, including Edmund Sumner, of whom I've never heard.
Yeah.
My only guess is that he's black. I tried to, like, guess from the other guys that were in that lineup if he was big or not. I don't really have an answer for that either. But he know we don't know who he is.
Yeah.
Them cats know who they are. They know it's, the only chance they got to win is because of Kevin Durant.
It's such a, like, we do, like, work analogies with sports, and we do, like, we analyze how players react and how they behave as if it's a normal work environment. And goodness gracious, that ain't normal. Like, it ain't nothing about it. Because I was just thinking, where else in the world can the most powerful person at a company be a 20-year-old without a college degree who also ain't in charge?
Right. But it's like expected how? To kind of be in charge.
Yeah. How is that a thing? And then we just, like, throw all this stuff on, like, nah, this is the way you're supposed to do it, because when I was here and I know how to work with people, you ain't never been in nothing like this. Like, basketball is even different than football. Football has a more traditional organizational structure and, like, some more rigid, a more rigid culture that, like, you can understand a little better. Like, I have no clue how you can expect or how things have to operate, because it has to be different in different places, because it's so much based on the personality of the star player, and his reaction is so much based on the way we treat him and the way we react to him. Like, I just don't know how you parachute into these different situations and people go back and have hindsight about, you know, where they really messed up was here. They gave him too much power here, or they did. Like, shut up. You don't know. Like, it's weird.
Look, even if it wasn't, I'm telling you, they know. You know why? Because if Kevin Durant rolls his ankle and he can't play the next game and they replace him with Yuta Watanabe, trust me, them dudes is looking at each other like, fellas, I don't think we're going to win tonight. Right? And so are the rest of us. And so is Vegas, who's making a 12-point spread or whatever it happens to be. And like I say, I thought, and I read it in context, I thought it was fair. It may be some people wind up getting their feelings hurt. But you know what also hurts people's feelings? When you the name on the marquee and you the reason why everybody got a chance here and people don't know it. That hurts your feelings too, right? Like, nobody thinks about the feelings of the Kevin Durant in a situation like this. Can you imagine being Kevin Durant and then Royce O'Neal and Nick Claxton come up? All right, big three, let's go.
Yeah, there's a measure of respect that I demand that you give me for the effort and production and the expectation. Like, that's another way of payment. Like, it's not just the money. I'm carrying all this pressure. Y'all need to treat me like I'm carrying all this pressure. Feel like the big piece of chicken when you daddy. Like, that's the least you could do is make sure that when I get home, the big piece of chicken is there. It's just a respect.
Yeah, and I have to pretend like it's not like that. Right? And so this is, I hadn't planned for us to talk about this as long as we have, but this is actually pretty interesting because sports, where you talk about, there's other jobs where the 20-year-old is the CEO and everything else, but there actually is a space like that, and that space is entertainment.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Now, the thing about entertainment, though, is the people who are in charge are much more in charge because contracts are, shall we say, more fluid. Right. And so there's all kinds of things that could be done or whatever it is. But like doing this show for HBO, I actually had to like dial some of this back with people. It is very interesting how hierarchical things are with respect to the talent. Right. Mm-hmm. The talent does not have to pretend like the talent does not know that they the reason why we here. I think it's better not to throw that in people's faces necessarily, right? But there's like a clear understanding there. This is what it is. And much talent in television and film obviously flexes the hell out of this, right?
I remember when you first started, that was something that you and I talked about. It probably wasn't on air. We probably were just talking, but it was about understanding your role. And like, yeah. I don't think that you realized initially that you essentially are the Kevin Durant of the situation, and everyone is looking to you for how you're going to react, what you're going to say, and every little thing that you say to anyone who's there has a disproportionate impact. And you gotta calculate the things that you say and even where you looking during meetings.
Right, correct. But here's the thing. There ain't gonna be no 50-year-old lady holding the door open for Kevin Durant because she was about to walk in the door and then saw Kevin Durant coming, and the hierarchy says, because I had to be like, hey, buck stops here. Like, I'm willing to play around with this stuff here. I'm willing to let the stylist tie my shoes for me, right? Like, I had to stop putting on my own jacket because I was going to elbow somebody in the face because the move is somebody puts your jacket on for you. You know, but like that world, there are all these things that go in that way. And in sports, yes, there are a lot of things like this. But then the expectation from the public is that you're supposed to be like, nah, man, we all the same. Even though everybody knows you not all the same, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you pretend like that too much in sports, somebody's actually going to start believing that y'all are all the same. Right? Yeah. Right. You're going to have a Jonathan Kuminga in the house. You know what I'm saying?
That's wild. The difference is, though, like the media around it and the engagement around it and the celebrity of the shoe tires and the coat holders is different in basketball and different in professional sports. Like the 50-year-old lady that held the door for you, no one's going to do a post-game press or post-show press conference with you and ask you how that impacted you. And no one is going to follow her Twitter and wonder how it's helping or whatever.
Right.
And she doesn't have that illusion that she shouldn't hold the door for you. And the person who holding your coat is not up here like, man, if I hold this coat long enough or well enough, eventually I'm going to be on stage.
Yes, yes, yes.
None of that leaks in. So it's a little, when I was making the first point, I was thinking like, yeah, show business like that. I imagine Urkel was the man on Family Matters once they finally switched over. But yeah, it's still a little different. I guess for the people that are on stage with you, that matters. And I know I'd read at some point that there was a lot of drama between the stars in that show, because if I remember correctly, Steve wasn't supposed to be the star.
No, he showed up. It turned out that way.
And then everybody like, no, but this was going to be my show. So that probably is a fair comparison.
Yo, I had not thought about that. That's a very, like, I remember the first Urkel episode of Family Matters, right? Because this is where our not too big age difference matters, right? Because it's in the flip over point of when you start remembering stuff. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't remember, Family Matters was a spinoff of a show called Perfect Strangers, which was based around Balky Bartokomous, I believe was his name. And he was, you know, buddy from Beverly Hills Cop, Bronson Pinchot. And they gave him his own show where he, you know, people loved him, Ellis Island type stories back then. He had just come to America. They'd never run this show now ever, just to be clear, with that accent and everything else. But anyway, there was a black lady that was an elevator operator in the building in the work building named Harriet. And then they gave Harriet her own show. I have no idea. I mean, she was like the sassy black woman that had like the peripheral job. I don't know who at ABC was like, yo, we need a black people show. What can we make it about? But they decided to make it about Harriet and her family. I don't know why. She was married to 5-0 named Carl Winslow.
Hold on. And I think the reason why they went with 5-0 Carl Winslow was because of Die Hard, right?
That makes sense. He was 5-0 and Die Hard.
And they was like, hey, be that guy in this black show.
Yeah, right. So he's in this show. They got three kids. There's nothing particularly noteworthy about it. And then one day they get the bright idea, well, let's have an episode where our middle child, Laura, is being pursued by some nerd at school. And it was the virtual equivalent of we pick somebody up off of waivers. Like, can you imagine if you got Giannis off of waivers, right? Like, all of a sudden, everything changed. You know what? That's what it was. For the rest of that team, they were Jabari Parker. right? They thought they was going to, every one of them thought at some point this was going to be their team. And then they went and got this skinny dude from Greece who's out here taking food home from the spread after the game, right? Because he's still used to being poor. And then boom, the world is his. And that is exactly what happened with Urkel. I had not thought about the beef that people might had, although I feel like y'all was going to get canceled. Y'all need to be thanking him every day.
You know that. They think that. They was like, see, the problem with this show is when they don't got enough storylines focused around me. Yep.
If I was
once
getting
they start
touches,
leaning in on me, they let me work, let me cook. And then Steve came in and they was like, oh, they just gonna let him do it. If they gave me that, I would put up numbers too. And Steve was cooking. He had the Urkel dance. He was doing everything, man.
Let me get some touches, right? Let
Harriet
me get
was
some
mad. Her and Carl was in the back, just gossiping, like, man, I can't get more touches. They gotta give me more touches.
Yo, you know what I would love to see on that or a discussion about is how the Stefan Urkel character came about. Because to me, the Stefan Urkel character came about, it felt very much like Jaleel White walked into the offices because, you know, he doesn't, from my understanding, is his relationship with being Urkel is a little fraught.
Yeah.
Understandably. But he walked in and be like, yo, man, I'm trying to be cool. Like can Urkel become cool? And they're like, hell no, Urkel can't become cool. Come on, man. Oh, how about this? This was the compromise. We gonna let you go into a refrigerator or wherever it was that he switched, you know, switched into Stefan Urkel. I'll never forget one of my brother's friends who knew me when I was like 9 years old. And then, you know, he talk on the phone like I don't even call on Christmas. And I guess I had turned like 14 or 15 or something. And he tell my brother, yo, man, both went from Steve Urkel to Stefan Urkel out of nowhere. You know, because the voice changed. But yeah, like that's wow. Gosh. What there is no Tom Brady is like the closest sports analogy that you got, except they got Drew Bledsoe out to paint. Like football, like you say, the hierarchy's clear. People have a better idea of who they are and who they aren't than there is in basketball. But this was like everybody that thought they was Drew Bledsoe was still on the team.
Man, you are Waldo, Geraldo, Faldo. You better get some rebounds and kick that thing back to Urkel. Out here thinking that you deserve some shots.
Oh, man, this ain't what
Eddie Winslow ass.
Eddie Winslow plays like his post Family Matters life when you think about it. Like he's played Muhammad Ali in something. I try to remember the other thing he played. At least as far as we know, luckily he did not co-star with that one ex-girlfriend he had because that would have been out there for everybody to see. You know what I'm talking about?
I believe I do.
Yeah.
It's only one ex-girlfriend of Eddie Winslow that I'm aware of.
Yeah, the Dome.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Super.
Yeah. That's a lot. There's a lot going on there.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I guess we can get to like talking about NFL action. It's fantastic. It was a very interesting week. I kind of hated that I didn't get to come around and talk to you till now. But there was something that had jumped out to you that I hadn't thought about, but it was a tear-filled weekend.
Yeah, that was, I mean, it like dovetails a little bit off of us talking about unique workplaces and that I found myself watching David Carr crying at the podium. I think Van Jefferson.
Hold on, Derek Carr. Yeah. Let's be fair to Derek. Let's be fair. No, you're good. Yeah. You're good. I just feel like, Derek, don't you worry. We're not going to let you be slandered like that.
David Carr, Derek Carr, Which one? David Carr. Derek. That's the one.
We got Derek.
David's the one that career got ended because they didn't want to protect for him. Correct. Derek Carr's the one that was crying at the podium.
Yes.
And Van Jefferson, I saw a clip of him hugging his dad, who was the coach of the Cardinals after they lost. And he's out there crying. We got Rivera crying in the locker room. Jeff Saturday was near tears. And I was just thinking about how there are a few things about football that I miss, but that weird, like, hyper, like, family environment is something that, like, away from it now, like, there are guys that I haven't talked to in decades, but in the moment, there's nobody I cared about more in the world in certain moments. And it's nothing like when something happens in their life that matters to them, whether it's football or not, you feel like incredibly close to them. And I was watching these games and just thinking about it, because like Ron Rivera and those guys out there playing hard, they won a big game and Ron's crying because he lost his mother. And 10 years from now, Ron Rivera ain't gonna remember half these guys' names. But in that moment, in that locker room, it was nobody that it felt like, at least there was nobody in the world that those guys cared about more and wanted to win for more than Ron Rivera. And it's a cool thing to be a part of. And I was thinking, like, in this job that I have and other jobs that I've had, the emotional swings are never that big. Like, I cannot imagine a situation where me and you are crying and hugging after a good show. Like, yeah. we just had a great show. No matter what's going on in either our lives, it's not going to be like, and it's, I don't know, it's not like that in basketball. It's not like that anywhere else. I wonder if it's part because of, like, the violence of the game and, like, the how consequential each game is, that it feels like every game feels like a major life event.
Yeah, well, you have to really, really care to play football. Yeah. Like, you can kind of be into basketball. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, this is my bag. This is what I do. But, like, you really have to care. And honestly, like, comparing that job to the one that we do now, football players just got to work so hard. Like, in every way, when you add in the whole pain factor, right? Like, the whole I'm actually being hit while I do this. You see with your own eyes how hard everybody is working on a regular basis. And I feel like the mutual respect game has to be a little bit different in that regard. And the stakes are so high. Like, with Derek Carr, I feel like an understated part of this season is he's playing for his job/career. Like, this is the last season that the Raiders have to keep him. They brought in a coach. I mean, this is the second time they brought in a coach/GM situation that did not choose him. He's playing for all of it. And if we've seen anything about Derek Carr, man, he just seemed like a real good dude. You know what I mean? And so he wants it for these other cats and everything else. And so, yeah, like, he's going to be the guy that I could see, you know, crying. Like, with Van Jefferson, because that's Sean Jefferson's son, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Sean Jefferson, who was drafted by the Houston Oilers when I was a kid, I want to say he was like an 8th or 9th round pick. Like, that was back when you did that. And so he barely got to the league, and his son probably wasn't like no 5-star recruit or nothing like that. Like, they both know what it took for him to wind up getting there. And now they're there together. Like, you know, football, everybody talks about that whole, man, it's okay for men to cry. No one has ever thought that it wasn't okay for men to cry. It's about what we've determined it's okay for men to cry about, right?
That is so,
like,
true.
Something like this, nobody's ever been out there calling a man a punk or a sucker behind that, right? Like, you may feel like that at a funeral because you feel like you got to be there for everybody else, but nobody's been like, man, that dude's mama died. He's just sitting out there crying like a little girl. You know, nobody's doing that. Yeah, nobody's doing that. Fair. By the way, me saying like a little girl is an impression of an ignorant person. It's not me saying that that is the comparison. But nobody's doing that, I don't think. So, like, in these situations, especially with football players, because y'all got crazy people.
Yeah.
And crazy people do cry. And, like, often when they fight, like, I feel like it's a bit more normalized in your hyper intense world.
I'm sure we've all seen that. The crazy dude in your high school is getting so angry that he tear up before he snap and haul off and whoop somebody's ass. Like, I don't know if they still do this, but like they had like a special ed thing where they separate the kids in my high school. And there was like some kids that is, I would assume that they figure out a better way to do this, but they had one room in the basement. And whenever we would go by that room or those, and they would like try to integrate them into like specials and other classes. So like we knew them and we would do things with them. And but we all were kind of aware that some of those kids had like some behavioral concerns. But once they started crying, that was like an alert to all of us that and those of us who would make jokes or whatever, the jokes must stop because this is not a game anymore. And the comparison that I'm looking for, and like this, it's a bad comparison to ever compare anything to like the military or war or anything like that. But like, I just been trying to rack my mind for like another occupation that the stakes are very high. And of course, football, the stakes are not that high, except sometimes it feels like it is. But where the stakes are that high every week, and that like creates, it was a book I think I read a long time ago that talked about how those high stress situations, it's like if you want to make a woman fall in love with you, you got to take her skydiving on the first date. Like high stress situations. And it wasn't like some pickup artist book. The book was about a bunch of other stuff, but that was a point that they were making about emotional, like the availability of you to make a connection with somebody when you're in an emotional situation. Part of that is the reason why training camp is so damn hard, because you're trying to bind the team together through this tough situation. And I think every week, like you mentioned, basketball, you can just happen to be 6'10 with good feet and you're going to be all right in NBA. Football, you got to like be fully committed throughout for most positions. And also I throw in there your thing about the crazy people. There's a sorting process in every occupation that when you get to the top level, it like the way the things that you have to do in that job, and like basketball is another good example. Yeah, there's going to be a higher proportion of tall people in the NBA than any other occupation. In football, there's going to be a higher distribution of crazy motherfuckers.
You know why? Because somebody was like, yo, we got to put this crazy to good use. Like, if we don't find a way to let this boy channel this crazy, we'll never get anything done in class, right? Like that's the move. And I would say, I don't have a problem with most comparisons of football in the military. This is why. It's not saying that winning a football game is as important as winning a war, though I do think that this comparison could lead to an interesting discussion of how important war is and why, right? Mm-hmm. But you can get killed playing football, okay? Somebody doesn't look out for you, you may not get killed, but you might wish that you were dead. Like, the difference is, in one place, we presume that bullets are flying at you. In the other place, 250-pound men who run 40 yards in 4.5 seconds, which, while perhaps not as lethal as a bullet, still something that you have to think about. The ways that players and like the management style is very much so akin to the military. And I imagine a lot of the football coaches that you had were people who came from the military, and what they learned about structure and order and management and organization is stuff that comes down from the military. People just say, well, we don't want to do that reflexively because, you know, the military is like the most ordained body that we have in our society and that we look at them that way. But no, like people do try to make football into the military. Again, not to say that the purpose of football is as important as the purpose of the military, but what it is not much different.
Yeah. My dad did 20 years in the military. My first football coach, Coach Marvin, would wear his fatigues to practice. This military like thought is like deeply ingrained in football. And to your point, and we're comparing football and basketball a lot. We can go baseball, we can go any other sport, but where's there another sport where you have to trust somebody with your health to the degree that you have to in football? And it's not just like, all right, if the left tackle thinks it's a run play, but it's a pass play, your quarterback, he gonna be hurting. Like that's a level of trust. But it's also like other positions. When I'm playing nickel, if they do not run the proper stunt, a 310-pound man is coming right for me and I can't do nothing about it but go head up with him. Like there is a level of dependence on other people for your well-being. And it's like, I guess for like LeBron, it's like, all right, you need the people around you to play well so that your legacy is properly remembered. because you can win enough championships. But in football, I need y'all to play well so I don't die.
Yeah.
Like, I need y'all to play well so that I don't tear something and never get to my money. I need y'all to play well so that, like, I can walk around with my head held high. As a cornerback, there is nothing worse than getting scored on in cover two because your safety got nosy. Because what you can't do is say, nah, what happened was my safety got nosy. You got to walk around the streets and be like, yeah, touch. Happens, it's tough. We gonna keep fighting, you know. Like that's the way that it works.
Yeah, nah, man. This is you came up in an interesting world there, Mr. Foxworth. Like that's my thought. Every time we start talking football stuff, I'm like, oh man, you came up in quite the interesting world.
I'm sorry, I didn't know if you was about to transition, but before you transition off of that, I wanted to point out, like, I had a conversation. The point you said came up in an interesting world just like brings me back to like thinking about my how close I was to like bad and like how my career was not probably that unique. So like I had a practice in college where one of our receivers got helicoptered off in a practice and we moved it down 10 yards and kept playing. I had during training camp, one of our linemen passed out in college. They put that man on the back of one of them Gator four-wheelers and took him away. We kept practicing. I played in one of the guys, Adam Taliaferro, was a guy at
Penn State's
football camp who like became a friend of mine. And then he got paralyzed in the game. I was playing in the Kevin Everett game in Buffalo when he got paralyzed. My teammate got shot and killed in a nightclub when I was in Denver. Another teammate had a heart condition and died in Denver. Preseason game in Denver, we were playing against San Francisco, and they had a lineman go off the field into the locker room. And after the game, he never came out. I don't remember exactly what happened because I was focused on trying to make the roster, but he had some sort of condition and died in there. And I'm talking... And like at no point throughout all of this, all these things happening, at no point was I like, this is weird.
Yeah.
Well, this ain't right.
You know Brandon Siler?
Mm-mm.
All right, Brandon Siler, he went to Florida, played linebacker. I want to say he played for the Rams and he played for the Chiefs. I did an event with him and Tequila Spikes in Atlanta about a month ago. And while we were shooting, he told the story. He had told us on the bus before we went out there, but I was glad he told it on camera because I'm like, oh, okay, now I can say this. He was Javon Belcher's backup in Kansas City, right? And for those of you who don't remember the story with Javon Belcher, Javon Belcher killed his girlfriend or wife, I can't remember which, killed her, comes to work. He wants to see his coaches, right? And ultimately killed himself in the parking lot. And apparently Romeo Crennel, who was the head coach, and Gary Gibbs, who was either defense coordinator or linebacker coach, I can't remember which, they knew he was coming and they met him in the parking lot, right? And they say he shows up, he's covered in blood, you know, from what's going on. And he wants to like the thank them and all of that stuff because he's about to, you know, he says he's about to kill himself. And they said to him, well, if you do that, who's going to take care of your kid? And that was the thing that gave him pause. But then the sirens came, the cops showed up. He said, it's too late. And those men stood out there and they watched him as he killed himself. Brandon said that Sunday came around, because I think this happened on Saturday. He said Sunday came around. He walked in that locker room and everywhere it said Belcher, they just scratched that out and put his name in there. They moved 10 yards over.
Yep.
And the game kept going. They just literally scratch it out, put a new name in. We gonna keep on rolling.
I mean, it's interesting that we ended up here like in the same week as a very different situation, the Virginia stuff. And like, a friend of mine, a college teammate of mine, is a coach down there, so I talked to him for a little bit. Not about the details of the case, but of the situation, but more about like how he's dealing with it. And this ties back to one of the first points we were talking about, is like how those bonds are so tight and how when good things happen or bad things happen to somebody who's on your team, it feels like family. Like, it feels like family. And I'm just talking to him, and he's like, yeah, I feel like I lost, like, brothers. I feel like I lost, like, sons. Like, these are, while he's a college coach, so he ain't known them forever, but they spend so much time together, and they go through so many things that are challenging together, and they feel so isolated. I think anybody who's ever been, and not even just a racial minority, but anybody who's been, like, isolated in a situation or a minority in a situation, how tightly the other person like you cling to, like, that's kind of what it feels like at college, because you're on campus and everybody else is a college kid, you an employee, but the employees don't treat you like an employee, and the kids around don't treat you like you a kid like them. Your schedule is not like that. Everything is different. It's better in some ways, it's worse in a lot of ways, but the fact of the matter is you get really tight with them people because you live with them, you work with them, you bleed with them, you fight with them, and, like, you get into trouble with them. Like, all the stuff that you see in movies, you know, like, how people build relationships, like, it's on steroids on a college campus. And then for something like that to happen, just, it's got to be terrible.
Yeah, like, and I've tried to keep up on this. I have not seen any particular details that provide an explanation for what happened. Mm-hmm. The closest I saw was that they said they had a witness who said that the dude wasn't just shooting indiscriminately. He was, you know, looking like he had targets. He had people that he was going on, which is wild because it was a class trip to D.C. Right. Apparently, you know, where this go, you know, when all this goes down, and he was a walk-on football player who didn't appear to still be on the team, but had been a walk-on football player, and he shot three football players. And so, like, when you talk about it, it's one thing going through everything and everything that, you know, comes with it in the bonds, but even if that dude wasn't on the team anymore, that dude was on the team. You know, like, what brought this to this point? And, you know, again, this one was a bit surprising in the sense that they brought him in alive. Like, I do not expect after somebody shoots five people in a situation like that, that ain't somebody that want to live. Like, that's not the way that I receive it off the rip when somebody does something like that. And he's in, you know, they brought him in, they arraigned him, they did all of this. But when they get to the bottom of this, I'm very, you know, not to take away from the tragedy with curiosity, but I do want to know, like, how did we get here with this guy in this team and this situation where you felt that you had to take it here? And apparently he had his gun and he had been, you know, got caught up with the gun before and all of this other stuff. And man, I couldn't imagine, like, when they finally got around to saying that they were canceling the game against Coastal Carolina, I'm like, hey man, y'all could have said that with the news flash that the shootings had taken place. Y'all weren't playing no damn football game. They wouldn't have been able, if that had happened in an NFL team, they wouldn't have been able to play the Super Bowl. If this had happened in the college football playoff week, we not playing that neither. Like, that just can't even be a thought, no matter how much money we talking about. If it had been Virginia Tech week, I don't know what they would have done. Like, lucky for them, it was Coastal Carolina, so they could just do it. But nah, man, this wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, I'm assuming that mental health is going to probably explain some of this, but it never can explain it all. But yeah, I'm with you. I have no idea. And like I mentioned, my man was hurting. I wasn't trying to hit him up for no information to figure out what was going on when I talked to him. I just was trying to, I don't know, be there to whatever degree that I can.
Hey man, I'm gonna tell you this part on that story too. And one might argue I'm leaning into stereotypes here, but I don't think it's the kind of stereotype that people will mind, though some people might, and I will understand. But I will admit that I had this thought when I watched the press conference with Tony Elliott, the head coach and the athletic director. I was like, I am kind of glad we got a black woman on the case here. Because mm-hmm. Virginia's athletic director is a black woman. And I say that just because I do think, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, I think that women by and large demonstrate a bit more emotional intelligence at these things. And I think the inclination to just keep on pushing that men have kind of been programmed with by this society, you're more likely to have a woman in that position to be like, hey, let's make sure everybody's okay, right? Mm-hmm. Let's make sure this person is feeling this. Let's make sure this person is taken care of, whatever it is, right? This is not a situation that I personally would want a bunch of dudes to be the ones to try to figure out what it is that we gonna do next, right? Like I'm saying, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. If I'm stepping out of line, you know, please let me know. I'm willing to own any mistake I'm making here. But I did see her and I was like, Okay, well, that's better to see. No, I don't expect black women to fix all of the world's problems. But if there's a problem, I am kind of feeling pretty good that black woman was right there. It happens to be her job, you know?
Yeah, I don't got nothing to add to that, but I agree. So we got to come back and do a Fox or Friday apology edition.
Yeah, then we got to do it.
We got to do it, but I think most people would. I mean, a bunch of men doing anything is normally a recipe for disaster. But I do think in this situation, you're right. Our instinct is, instinct's probably the wrong word, but the general move is like push through. And all the stories that I told, the kicker in all the stories that I told was the response every time was, we just got to push through. We just got to scratch them names out and keep working.
Yeah.
Like, that ain't always the answer.
Hey, I ain't gonna lie, man. My therapist is a black woman, but I had something where I did a couple sessions with this dude one time, and I was ready to fight him. It was not. I didn't find his approach to be at all what I was looking for in this. It was kind of like, yo, man, who you talking to like that? That ain't even what I said, bro. You know,
not great listening. Well, he was just a suck it up guy, just like, hey,
nah. It wasn't. It's a. He misunderstood something, but whatever it was, okay. I was just kind of like, hey, man, I feel like I'm over here owning what my culpability might be, and you ain't taking accountability for none of the mistakes that you have clearly made in the last 5 minutes. Yeah, it got a little tough.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
We got any interesting games this week? Because I've been looking at the last couple weeks, man. The NFL has given us booty football.
I mean, I think
booty games. The slates have not been good. The football, okay enough.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's Fox or Friday, so we don't care about the Thursday night game. But I think Cowboys-Vikings is a game
that's
going to be interesting. That's like the one this week. And then next week, we're going to be forced to talk about Deshaun Watson's return. But if there's one game that matters this week, I think it's Cowboys-Vikings.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. And we got the Patriots and the Jets. Hey, man, I want to send a shout out to the Giants and the Jets, because the thing about living in New York is you got to get their football games, right? They put them on, and for 5 years, that was whack. Now, man, they be putting them both on at 1 o'clock, and I don't even necessarily know which game I want to watch sometimes. Like, you know, they playing the Lions. The Giants playing the Lions this week, so I ain't really so much worried about that one. Oh, wow, we got a misery bowl, though. The Raiders and the Broncos. It's going to be real terrible for whoever loses that game. I will not want to be on the team that has that. Hey, man, but what going to happen if our man Jeff pulls out a win over your 8-1 Philadelphia Eagles?
I mean, that's the only time I'm going to have to root against the Eagles. Because I need Jeff to go undefeated and win Coach of the Year just for the comedic purposes. It's going to be bad for my liver because I got smacked after my man Jeff won his first game just by myself, happy, calling him, celebrating. I was just so happy for him. I mean, there's really no chance that they're going to win this game other than it's just because football, sometimes football happens, but they are not comparable in any respect, but I hope they win. We'll see.
Dominique, do people recognize that there is, in fact, a possibility that the Indianapolis, well, I guess they can't. I was going to say they could go to the playoffs, except I think the Titans are probably too good. Although, however long they got to keep trotting Malik Willis out there, there's really no telling exactly how that part.
I think we got Tannehill back this week.
Oh, you do? Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, ain't like he ain't never found nothing he can mess up.
Yeah, they're only 4-5. They're not, the Colts aren't terrible. And I picked the Colts to win the division at the beginning of the year. So, like, they are not bereft of talent. They got some, like, all pro level guys and Shaq Leonard and Stephon Gilmore.
Ain't got him no
defense.
More. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
He just had back. I got to snap back into he's Shaq now. I got to remember that he's not.
Yeah.
He's not Darius anymore. And just so you guys know, Shaq was always his name. He didn't go Muslim. You know what I'm saying? And like flip up the situation. Their schedule will get a little monstrous though. They got the Eagles, then they get to play the Steelers. But after that, at the Cowboys, at the Vikings, home for the Chargers, at the Giants, but at least they get to go out on a pleasant note, because there's nothing that the Indianapolis Colts have loved more in the last 20 years than playing against the Houston Texans. Even that year where they started off like 0-13 or whatever it was, they went out there and they beat a Texas team that, as I recall, went to the playoffs with Dan Orlovsky.
Dan got that win?
Dan got that win. Those two wins they got that year were Dan's.
Oh, congratulations, Dan. They give him a hard time for running out the end zone. We'll never celebrate him. The man made it to the damn NFL, won some games as a starting quarterback. Who cares? He got a safety.
Yes.
The man got a couple wins. It's like Jeff Saturday.
Jeff Saturday, man. Like that, they would, if they let's say, and this is not going to happen, it's just not possible with the talent, but they got, I'm counting, 7 games left. If they go 3-4 in those 7 games, that would wildly exceed any expectation that I had. Also of note, it's what I think Frank Reich would have done.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. He going to get that job, too. I'm happy for him, man. I hope it works out.
I mean, I guess as long as he doesn't wet his pants, he'll get that job.
Yeah, they want him. It seems like Jim Irsay wants him to do it. Either way, it's a win-win for him. Get him a little fat check, raise his profile if he want to come back to this stuff, if things don't work out, or mess around and be a head coach of an NFL football team. It's still crazy as hell to me to think about.
This is the only thing I'll say, though. If Jeff actually wanted to be an NFL head coach, he'd have been somebody's offensive line coach right now. Like, I feel like Jeff Saturday could have walked off the field and said, I want to be an offensive line coach, and somebody would have given him a coach the offensive line job right away. That was not what he felt like doing. And so I'm curious to see as this goes for him. We keep talking about, you know, whether he'll keep the job. I want to see whether he'll want the job. Like, they could win some games and all of that stuff, but he could look around and just be like, hey, man, this ain't the life I want.
That's fair. Jeff like money.
There.
I know Jeff a little better than most people know Jeff. And like all the stuff that you see Jeff doing is real, it's genuine. It's not like he's not like a fake religious guy. He's not like a fake relationship guy. All that stuff is real and genuine, but don't nobody ask him no questions about money. So y'all don't know how many businesses Jeff's involved in, how often Jeff be asking me about investments. Jeff like money. So if they want to pay him NFL head coach money, he going to figure out this lifestyle.
Hey, man, there we go. We'll see how that goes. But, hey, that is Dominique Fosworth. Check him out on Get Up. Check him out on First Take. Check him out on Anscape. Check him out on Debatable. Check him out on the Dominique Fosworth Show. Download the podcast, my man. I appreciate it as always.
Me too. Thank you.
No problem, man. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. Remember, call the voicemail line, 860-516-4119. Tell us about that first time that you went and spent Thanksgiving at a home from, shall we say, a culture different from your own. I'm sure you have a great story about that. Want to hear from y'all too, white people. 860-516-4119. Dan Stancic, Parker Owens, Adi Khan handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We will be odd on Monday, but Wednesday and Friday next week, we will not. So I don't want to hear your complaints. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.